ist Simply Focus mit Elva Czerny und Dominik Gilda for Life and Joy and Ease.
Welcome back to the Simply Focus podcast, The Good Life Approach, your podcast for life in joy and ease. This is episode number 32 and my name is Elva Czerny.
And I'm Dominik Gilda. Hi there.
We are very excited and happy to have Keiko Yonoyama with us today. Hi, Keiko.
Hi, Elva, Dominik. Thank you for inviting me.
It's so nice to have you here.
You're a licensed marriage and family therapist.
Yes.
You live in the United States in Denver, and you originally come from Japan.
Right. I was born and raised in Japan until I was 19 years old, and I moved to United States to attend university here. Since then, I just decided to stay and start working as a therapist, and I got family, and now I'm located in Denver.
Awesome. So we are on Prince Edward Island today, and we just mentioned that we have a very funny story of our last night's stay. So Dominik, what happened yesterday?
Yeah, we were in Charlottetown and had this beautiful farmer's day. Then we decided to go on and drive to the national park. We crossed the national park about three times to find the campground, but we couldn't find one. All the campgrounds we found were closed. So we looked up on freecampsites.net and found that there is Brackley Beach and that there's a drive-in. So we went there and we only then realized that drive-in here is a cinema where you can stay with your car and then watch a movie while sitting in the car. So we came to this guy who sells the tickets and we asked him and said, well, are we right here? Can we stay here overnight? And he said, oh yeah, if you pay the tickets and watch the movie, you can stay overnight. So we watched the movie Crazy Rich Asians. I had a beautiful evening and stayed at the movie theater overnight with our RV.
I didn't know you could stay at the drive-in theater overnight.
We didn't know either, so it was really very special and a very fun evening. We enjoyed it very much.
That reminds me of another story. We met you on your birthday in Denver at this coffee spot.
Right.
And we really enjoyed celebrating your birthday with you and your kids.
Without knowing, actually.
Yeah, that's right. It was just happened to be that day when you were in Colorado Springs and we corresponded each other and then you drove up here. That was super special. Yes.
And we really love to see all the things you're doing beside your work as a therapist and your business. It's called Small Step Count Counseling. And you're the host of the monthly online book club where you read solution-focused books. Your solution-focused journey started a few years ago and you're now really into it and fascinated by it, as we know. So what fascinates you with solution focus?
The most thing that I got fascinated with solution focus is that possibilities and then open-mindedness. It's not that I have to follow certain ways to problem solve. It's more like brainstorm what's possible out there and then what fits me instead of, oh, I have to learn somebody's way to do certain things and I have to follow that regimen. Instead, I can be creative and then make it fit to me. And that is the most part that fascinates me, that there are possibilities that I can brainstorm.
Yeah.
And then also, because I was ingrained in a CBT when I started being a therapist and started internships and, you know, studying for licensure for a marriage and family therapist, the most used practice was CBT at the time when I was studying. So it was very difficult to hear the problem story day after day after day, working with little children where I started my practice. So switch to solution focus perspective and able to hear what's going well, what do you like about school, what do you like about your sister, what do you like about, you know, your family or where you live is just so refreshing and so nice to hear. Because yeah, certain parts of their life, when I was working with children, yeah, there's certain part of life that was problematic. Yes, I don't discount that. But there is other part of their life that was going well, such as friends, or oh, I'm really good at soccer, or I love this teacher who kind of showed me how to do these cool stuff, or things like that. That is so much nicer way to communicate communicate and relate to other people, especially kids. I don't want to bombard them with traumas and all the things they don't have any control over, you know, but I can have them keep talking and be kind of active in the communication instead of me teaching them, no, you need to do this, just not fun way to relate to the kids. So knowing the solution focus was such a blessing that I enjoyed encounter with other people more. And then one of the notion that I was taught at the internship, maybe not for every therapist in the world, but I was taught that if you make a client cry in a session, you did a fantastic job. And I didn't like personally to see other people cry. Yeah, it's good to cry sometimes and it's necessarily for human emotion, but it's not fun to make people cry. Yeah, I'm not that kind of tough skin kind of person. So I think the solution focus, if they decide not to talk about it, I can let go. I don't have to force them to talk about something really hurtful. I can be respectful. Yeah, okay, that's not something you want to talk about. What would you like instead? I can talk about other things. That's the most helpful thing as a therapist to survive in this world, I think.
And instead of crying, you help them to laugh again.
Yes. Or talk. Some kids didn't want to talk because they know that I will talk about problem, or a therapist supposed to talk about problems, or parents prep them. You need to tell everything that is wrong with you. Sometimes parents say that in front of me. Oh, you have to tell them what's wrong with you, what happened in the bathroom last night, or something like that. And then they don't want to talk. But when they're talking about favorite comic, favorite teacher, favorite friends, or favorite sister or brother or whoever, they start talking. And I was like, yeah, this is it. I like that kind of communication. We don't address that problem directly, but if you're in a generally good mood, you're able to do hard stuff along the way. So, yeah.
And I think there's an interesting parallel between children and adults. I rather talk about things that I want. I rather talk about things that work well. I rather talk about things I have in my control and I can influence than all this other stuff. And I would probably not like to talk to people at all the things that are wrong and all the things that I cannot influence and why I did things. And I think it's the same with kids and the same with adults.
Mm-hmm. Especially some stranger who I just happened to be there, right? Who wants to talk about these shameful or guilt feeling in front of stranger? No, I would never do that. Why do I have to force other people to do something that I don't like to do?
Yeah. So Keiko, you talked about working with children right now, and I know you also work a lot with young mothers and women in postpartum period. So, well, what fascinates you with the work there, and what differences does solution focus make in that work for you?
So while I was working with children, of course, the parents have to be involved because they are the one who has control over the environment. And then soon after I started working with children, I noticed that sometimes I spend way more time with parents to make things happen for kids in a way that works for them, for their family. And parents know way more than me about their kids, right? An hour of talking with kids, I would never know some other resources or strengths that, you know, parents happen to observe it throughout their life. So at the time, I realized that, yeah, I want to work with parents more. And then as I have two kids and then start talking to more moms, and then I realized that postpartum period, a lot of people suffers like depression or anxiety or things like that without getting any help. So I was like, yeah, then I want to work with mom or parents because that's how we facilitated, you know, how to raise kids. So I thought it will be more influential if I work with the parents instead of work with kids. Of course, working with kids is very important in some aspect, but in terms of foundation and make the early relationship between parents and kids going, I thought working with parents will be more influential and more important. While I work with moms, I usually, of course, ask what they want out of the session. Sometimes they want to get the depression gone or get their old self back, or they want to figure out how to care for kids or how to interact with other people so that it's helpful for them, such as partners, husbands, mother-in-laws, or other people in their life. That's where I think the solution focus works well, because I don't know their life. There are so many different types of families. It's not cookie cutter. It's not like, oh, this is a family structure and it has to fit everybody. There's so many variety of families. Somebody who has only, you know, friends around, like you guys, people who travel a lot, and then people who has, you know, mother-in-laws and their own mothers to help out. There are so many different variety that I cannot just say, oh, you need to ask your mother for help. Some people, that's not available, you know. So that's where I feel the solution focus gets so much helpful for the clients, because then they can kind of figure out what works for them, what's available, what's working, so that they can kind of construct how they want it to look like. When I was working with kids, a lot of family had multiple kids, 3 or 4 kids at a time. And, oh, spend 30 minutes with single kid so that you can foster a better relationship. Doesn't work for a mom who is single mom with 4 kids, right? So mom know that, oh yeah, they like the bath time or singing time or other time, that they can be creative and can foster better relationship. If that is the case, they can figure out like, oh, what works for us, instead of me prescribing like, you need to do this, you need to do that.
Yeah, so they can really be experts for their lives and come up with what they want and what works well in their families, and also what works well with their kids.
And another thing that I like about solution focus is you see very detailed, small change in their life, or just small, slight improvement. You are not looking for like drastic, magnificent difference, but the small difference that I want you, like I ask them, I want you to notice small differences between now and this session, like what would be better, what you want to keep. And when I reflect that to my life with the kids, not really realistic to seek a big humongous difference. Sometimes some days are so tough that I just need to see just a couple minutes of rest or a couple minutes of laughing together with kids. That's all I need to keep going, right? Yeah, so that I like about solution focus, where I can see just tiny things instead of big difference and biggest shift in life. Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about you as a mother, and a while ago the two of us had a lovely conversation about solution-focused parenting, and Dominic and I are very much looking forward to meeting you in Boulder and at the SFBTA conference, together with Pamela King, do a panel discussion on solution-focused parenting. And I'm very curious, Keiko, what changed for you when you learned about solution focus in your way of being a mother?
I think being Asian mother, I think it's cultural thing, or maybe not all the Asian parents, but a lot of Asian parents sets the standard really high. The kid's supposed to be this way. I need to do this. I need to do that to make sure the kids has a better life. And a lot of time that will put me in a position where I look for things that is not meeting the standard, the things that I need to improve. But solution focused lens, I can see what's working, what's going well for the kids, that kind of thing. So the shift in focus helped me a lot, where I don't beat myself too flat. I can see, well, yeah, the certain thing didn't work out, but at the end, they were laughing, they're having fun. That's okay. Instead of everything has to be exact kind of expectation. Yeah.
And it was so great to see you in Denver when we met you in this coffee place where your daughter was playing, I think, with a puzzle, and Bibiana came and she wasn't that happy. And instead of going there and just telling her to do it this and this and this way, you ask her a question and ask her what she wants instead. And she came up with another version, and she came to the table and played there. And it was so great to see that as a small piece of your solution-focused parenting.
Yeah, that was a nice way to interact with kids, because sometimes they have so much better idea than me. The creative way to solve something, or creative way to make it work. and asking them, so what would you like instead? That relieved me from guessing work. As when I just had my son, I really didn't enjoy the first 2-3 months where there was not a lot of feedback from him besides cry. Because I was like, oh, I have to do a lot of guessing work here. I have to go through the list of what he wants. A lot of parents says, oh, you can learn like what they want from different cry, but I was not in tune to that. So I was like, well, I need to go through the list of my husband, and I was like, okay, we need to go through the list because we don't know what he wants. He's just crying. So when he was able to give us more feedback, it was so much helpful to more in tune with what he needs. Now they both can talk really well. So asking them what they want makes it so much easier for me to be helpful for them. Instead of, do you want this? Do you want that? How about this? How about that? Like, they can go through a lot of things to say no to, which makes them in a grumpy mood because, mom, you're not getting it. But by asking them, like, what do you want me to help you with? They can tell me what's working or what will be most useful of our time.
Mm. And what I really love about it was also seeing your daughter. She was very proud that she came up with her own solution, and just to feel like the connection between the two of you, you respecting her as an expert for her life, and at the same time being here for her by asking questions, by supporting her in finding her solution, is something I really admired seeing you doing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. On previous podcasts, we shared some of our things we do in our solution-focused family. Mm-hmm. What are you doing besides asking them what they want instead?
Yes, I remember that was like very early on your podcast, you put a weekly challenge of asking what's your highlight of the day. We still have that pen that you gave us, the highlight pen. And I asked them, what was fun? What was good? What did you like about your day the most? We not certainly say what is highlight of your day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my son is like, oh, you're doing therapy again. If I do use that kind of word. So I try to embed it in a regular daily words. But, you know, we can discuss about what was funny thing that happened to you today. And sometimes he will tell me about, oh, I was able to show my friends how to do origami. Because in my family or in my house, we do a lot of crafts. And one of that Japanese traditional craft is origami, where you do the paper fold. And he was able to show that to his friends because he have done it so many times. So, you know, these kind of things I would never know if I just ask general question of how was your day? Mm. You know, he being 10 years old and becoming more teenage year, everything is, oh, nothing, just fine. It can be done in 2 words. But by asking what was fun today, you can tell me little story. So that was really nice that you suggested in the podcast.
I really love the way you highlight how important it is to bring it to the everyday language of your kids or of your family. And with that, not asking about highlights, but about, well, what was fun today or what you enjoyed today or what you liked today.
Yeah, this reminds me of an encounter we had just a few days ago where we talked about asking kids for highlights and things that work well. And not being solution folks, they said, well, we ask our kids about 2 things that they liked today and 1 thing that they didn't like. And it was interesting to see what difference it makes instead of asking kids what they didn't like, asking them, for example, what is 1 thing that they would like to have different, for example? How would they want to have it? And kind of things like that. And still addressing things that, well, maybe did not work, but in a different way instead of what didn't work, what was wrong, what was bad.
Right.
Instead of what would you like to have instead? What would you like to see different? And
how would you notice?
Yeah, how would you notice and things like that? So really like how you stick to the solution focused perspective of what works well and also what you want instead if something doesn't work.
Right.
And one more thing that comes to my mind when doing these highlight rounds, or however you want to call them, is the time you give the other person to think. And we realize so often how difficult it is for parents to allow their kids to develop their thoughts, because we want to help our kids to come out with their words and to come out with their brilliance, or to support them in whatever way. And then we start talking for them. When we really manage to stay calm and listen, this makes such a huge difference. To listen to the stories that kids come up with is just amazing.
Right. I was just discussing it, that exact topic, with my husband today morning, saying that when other adults talk to my kids, my instinct is to talk for them to the other adults, answer for them, such as the teacher, the neighbors, you know, any encounter. And, you know, that doesn't let them know how to talk to the other people. And then sometimes it's just very test my patience to wait for them to formulate what they want to share with other people. But it's very important skill for them to know, like, how much do I want to share? How much do I want to tell them? Things like that. So yeah, I can relate what you said.
Yeah, whenever other people talk for their kids, I think, well, how would I like it if someone talks for me? I would like not only to have a kid who really can speak up for himself or herself, but also be a parent and be aware of how much expert they are in their lives.
So children is very challenging for parents. And I realize, Keiko, you do not only work in one-to-one sessions with parents or mothers, you also have parent support groups. And I'm very curious about that. Could you share a little bit about what you're doing in your parent support groups and how that works?
The parent support group is the part of what I do as a maternity mental health provider, where I offer the space for the moms to come with the baby if they want to freely talk about their concerns, freely talk about what went well this week, what are they going to do to take care of themselves, so that they can have a sense of, I'm not only one who is going through a really, really bad day. Everybody has a bad day with the baby, so that they can feel, even though they're maybe alone in the room in the middle of the night with crying baby, just the fact that they kind of recognize, no, a lot of parents go through this and I'm not alone. I have friends such and such, you know, told me that her going through that story, that alleviates that loneliness that you feel as a parent, like, oh, why? Why is happening right now? What's wrong with this situation or me or the baby? It's so easy to get into that thought in the middle of the night when the baby is crying unstoppably. But knowing that, you know what? Everybody goes through this. I can get through this. I saw somebody who went through it and then still, you know, have a good relationship with the baby, that I wanted to provide that kind of space where people can get a little bit of hope when things are hard.
So really, friend power that's stronger than if you just do it all by yourself.
Yes. I think we are trained to do everything by ourselves in the schooling system, our society. So when we get the baby, we try to apply that same mentality in parenting, or at least the first 6 months where things are really hard, physically and mentally. So I think it's really nice, different perspective to say, no, we don't have to apply that same mentality here.
So how does solution focus come in your parent support groups?
Of course, we talk about what's concerning you this week or what was hard. But at the same time, I always ask, so what is going well this week? What's different? What changed? The good thing about working with the baby and mom, baby changes all the time. Oh, he slept 6 hours last week, only one day, but he slept through the night. Or I heard the doctor saying that she is gaining weight as she is supposed to. Just these little touching bases of these little improvements or differences, I think makes a big difference in their perspective of, okay, this hardness, not going to last forever. Something change all the time. And that is one of the, you know, solution focused assumption. Change is inevitable. Changes are happening all the time. So the fact that we can talk about, so what's better, what's working, what's different this week, maybe for better, you never know. Or just tiny, tiny difference that made you come back to this week or able to get through last week, that kind of things, to remind ourselves like, okay, we can get through this.
So hopeful.
Yeah, it is hopeful. Yeah. Hopeful way to think about it.
Wow. You also were in Japan, went to J-Soul. So what differences do you see between solution focus in the US where you're based and in Japan?
Well, I see the similarity and differences. So differences I saw was how much the therapists or the listener acknowledges the difficulty as well as the what's working before the question. They spend a lot of time reflecting or saying that I heard this and this and this. Despite of that, how did you make it go? How did you cope with it? And then the description of what the client described to the listener is very honored and reflected back a lot of times, where in English, sometimes you're very respond quickly, I felt like, to get in there and don't let the clients go on and on about explaining. The use of time seems to be different in a way. And then also the Japanese language and English language have different verb tense use. Japanese tend to be more simpler verb tense than English. I couldn't translate directly from English to Japanese, where I learned solution focus in English first. So I try to translate it in my head. How would I say the exact same thing in Japanese? And I was like, wait, do I have that words in Japanese to explain how the verb tense is working here, such as going future and looking back. I had big difficulty doing that in Japanese, where we have more simpler system of verb tense. So hearing that from Aoki-san or Miss Kurosawa, who is a child psychologist who works in the school setting, she does WOW programs in middle school. So listening to them, how they do that, going to the future, looking back, how they see themselves or how they worked it out. I was like, ah, okay, I got it. Because language is so living thing that unless you hear it in live, it doesn't make any sense sometimes how you say it, like lost in translation. And I was like, wait, I'm feeling like I'm being Siri or Google Translate here because how I said it didn't make any sense if I was listening. So it's really nice to hear in the live sessions how they communicated that. Just a little nuance of differences.
And you say language, and language is also embedded in culture, and well, there are cultural differences. What I realized in the US, for example, where there's still kind of this aim high culture and kind of preferred future, I want to go there and reach that and do that and be the best and whatever, compared to the Japanese culture that I think is quite close to the Swiss culture, not sticking out too much. Otherwise, you will be hammered in.
Yeah, exactly.
The nail sticks. I think you have this Japanese saying, if the nail sticks out, you have to hammer it in again.
Yes.
And what I realized is that the way they talk about preferred future in more Japanese solution-focused dialogue is mostly much smaller and less this kind of aiming high and reaching to the top. How do you see that?
I think the changes that they describe is very humble way and subtle sometimes how they describe the goal. Like I will notice subtle change in his gaze or the subtle way of communicating. It's not big, gigantic, fluffy difference like, oh, I achieved the highest salary in the world kind of thing. No. It's just subtle little interactional things that they are looking for a lot of time, I felt. And then also the way they complimented the talker is very down to earth, very humbling way. Instead of cheerful praise kind of compliment, it's more of acknowledging what they're doing more than celebratory, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's very close to the Swiss culture, for example. When we came here, it was like, whoa, everything's awesome here and you're great. And you're like, whoa. We're like, what? Felt a little bit intimidated. And in Japanese, as a dialogue, you have this word okay message. It's not appreciation. It's a kind of okay message. It's okay. And this appreciating of those small things, also with the preferred future, those small things you said, the subtle changes, connects also well to what you said with the babies and also the mothers and seeing those small changes in their life. So this focus on small changes that go into a positive direction compared to those big things. That's really stunning for me to see.
Yeah, and talking about language and words, I know you're a big fan of books and you're the host. You actually had this idea of hosting an international online solution-focused book club for free, actually. So we would really love to invite people to your book club as we did before. And it's amazing to have you here today. to share a little bit about the book club, what you're doing there, how that works, and how people can connect to the book club.
Yes. So I started a book club, international book club, on an online platform called Zoom Meeting. That happens every second Tuesday of the month, unless there is something going on that I cannot attend or anybody cannot host, to provide the space for talking about solution-focused assumptions and applications of what we read. Because when I talk to the solution-focused practitioner, I get so energized and so inspired. And I was like, yeah, I can do this. I'm so loving what I do. And then that happens at the conferences or the big event. And then I wanted it to be more in daily kind of way so that we can continue talking about it in between the conferences or in between these big workshops. It will be so interesting to continue this interesting, exciting, and energizing conversation with other practitioners all over the world. Even though some people say like, oh, the solution-focused practice are different in different region of the world, but then still the assumptions and basic things are the same. Yeah, I really, really love these interactions and the different ideas and different inspirational things or what worked for them. Applying this solution focus is very, very nourishing.
So what book are you reading right now and when will be the next meeting?
We are loosely basing our discussion on a book called Tales of Solution by Insoo Kim Berg and Yvonne Dolan. And we're going to be focusing on chapter 6. It's going to be happening in October 9th. And it happens at 10 o'clock at the mountain time, which is GMT minus 6. So it's, different time zones. Some people attend it in the middle of the night in the middle Central Asia. And some people are in the evening and different kind of thing. But it's really nice little get together.
We are happy to put the link to your Facebook group with further information in the resource section of this podcast on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 32.
So Keiko, if there is one thing that you would like others to consider or to know that you learned in your solution focused journey, what would that be?
I think the learning is that allowing yourself to be okay if things doesn't work, or great if it works, it's good, but allowing yourself not to know or not to succeed all the time. I think that was the biggest learning from solution focus for me.
Beautiful. So let's come to the challenge of the week, Keiko.
So as we talked about, the solution focus is very much about attitudes, right? How we see the world. Because I love books and reading about it so much that even though the one book is not solution focus, I see the solution focus essence in many, many different literature. I posted the other day on Facebook about Silverstein poem about what's in your sack or something like that. That everybody asks about the sack that I'm carrying, but nobody asks about where I'm going, who I am, how I'm doing, all that kind of thing. So I saw the solution focused essence in that poem. My challenge is for people to look for the solution focused essence in what you're reading or what you're hearing in a song or the printed materials or pictures to celebrate the solution-focused assumptions. Yeah, that will be my challenge.
And share it with us, please. Yeah. Let us know where you find solution focus in there. And talking about song lyrics, there is a solution focus playlist. We're happy to add the link there as well for all people who are curious about solution focused songs. There's a great collection. And whenever you feel like there is something missing, let us know. We are happy to forward it to Jonas Walls, who is hosting this list and providing it on Spotify. So thank you very, very much, Keiko, for this lovely and very inspiring conversation. I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing you soon at the SFBTA conference in Boulder from November 7th to 10th, and to reconnect and to spread the word about solution-focused parenting.
And then I'm looking forward to hearing from other practitioners how they implemented their life. And possibly we will have some participant who had solution-focused practitioner parents, and they were the receiver. And I'm so intrigued to hear what was it like to grow up in a solution-focused household. Hopefully we will have somebody like that.
Yeah, so please comment on our podcast, and Keiko will also be there. So if you have a question for Keiko or a comment or something you especially appreciated, let her know and let us know, because your voice matters, and what is important for you might make a vital difference for other people too. So please help us inspire others and do more of what works.
And if you like what we do, please not only let us know, also share our podcast and give us a rating on iTunes. This will help us to spread the word about Solution Focus even more, and will make it easier for other people to find the Simply Focus podcast.
And have you already subscribed to our podcast? If not, go to the website www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast, and then on episode 32 or any other episode, and on the right hand side you'll find the different ways to subscribe to this podcast.
A big thank you once again for listening to our podcast, and a big and huge thank you to you, Keiko, for being here with us. Have a lovely week ahead, everyone, and see you, hear you next week. Goodbye.